Thank you, Jess. Thank you, David. And thank you all for turning up today. It's great to see you. The number one issue facing business is talent. How to find it, how to attract it, and how to keep it. Recent research conducted by Deloitte Australia Board Effectiveness, the director's cut, found that the ASX 200 winning the war for talent will be the number one challenge on the board agenda over the next 12 to 24 months. Former US Deloitte CEO Mike Cook coined the term the stupid curve when noting the overrepresentative number of men in management compared to the total number of men in his workforce. Australia's own stupid curve here demonstrates the cause of the talent shortage, the female talent that business has wasted for too many years now. The women who are now graduating in equal numbers from our universities as men are certainly not stupid. As a nation, we have before us a leadership challenge. How do we end the discrimination and bias which prevents business from tapping into all talent, not just male leadership talent, to deliver sustainable economic development? I commend CEDA for its initiation and support of the research by Dr. Hannah Pitterman, The Leadership Challenge, Women in Management, which lays bare the issues that confront women in the workplace and offers approaches to counter them. The report briefly chronicles the changes in the social and economic participation of women in Australia, spearheaded by legislative reform in the 1980s, including the introduction of the Affirmative Action Act in 1986, now the Equal Opportunity for Women in the Workplace Act, which I as director administer. Today, women are participating in the workforce in numbers nearly equal to men, but are virtually absent from the leadership. Only 12% of the ASX 200 executive managers are women, and only 4 are CEOs. So why are women not representative in leadership positions given their total workforce participation? I often get the response to that question that the reason is because women choose to leave the workforce because they are mothers. The reality is, however, that the majority of women are pushed. Whilst the pool of competing priorities of raising children, caring for the elderly, and participating in the community are real, the push from a hostile, non-inclusive workplace that does not see women as leaders is greater and ultimately more powerful. In May of this year, I launched together with our sponsors Hayes Generation F, research looking at how to attract, engage, and retain women. The research found that two of the 5 most common reasons for women to leave the previous job were a difficulty in progressing and a lack of clear career development. To have children or to create more work-life balance did not make the top 5. The workplace bias against women and their perceived lack of commitment to work is career-limiting for most women. This is demonstrated well with one of the verbatims from Dr. Pitterman's research. A female manager is recounting her conversation with her manager about promotion. I said to him, "Why didn't I get the general manager role? I'm easily movable and willing to work anywhere." His response, "I thought you were only joking. And what about your partner?" This happens daily to women in the workplace, and they leave. But be clear, the talented woman is not choosing to leave in the real sense. She had no choice. Her skills, her style, and talent are not valued in the organisation because she is a woman. EOWA's own Generation F research also highlights the ongoing gender bias working against women. Both men and women in our survey agree that the workplace is a bit of a boys' club, that men progress and get promoted more quickly than women, women have to work harder to prove themselves than men, and men are paid more than women for the same job. Both men and women agreed to this in our survey. Despite 20 years of equal opportunity legislation, it is no wonder business is losing the talent war if these values and cultures remain. Dr. Pitterman says in her paper that the principle of equal opportunity has remained a marginal concern and a non-core issue for business. I agree with her. Around the edges, many organisations have attempted to address the issues and continue to do so. However, despite the introduction of some structural initiatives like paid maternity leave, flexible working practices, and a few pay audits here and there, business has focused most effort in fixing the women. Assisting women adapt their behaviours to culturally fit within the masculine culture, like leadership development and voice training. So women remain underrepresented in leadership positions because regardless of how she seeks to fit in, she is ultimately rejected because of her difference. Business ends up directing their blame of this situation on the women. The pull, not the push. A business that reports to EOWA ended its policy of paid maternity leave because it said the policy was abused. Women were not coming back, they said. The management didn't think about why the women did not want to come back. Could it be the work environment? In US research, women returning to the workforce after maternity leave were surveyed, and not one woman, not one from the business sector, wanted to return to her previous employer. Questions exploring the nature of the business environment and their possible negative impact on women are rarely posed. Like, how do our recruitment practices favour men? Is our performance management scorecard biased towards only one command and control style leadership? Or what impact does sex harassment or bullying have on our culture? Or why do more women leave our workplace in the first year of employment than do men? These questions and more need to be asked, but more importantly, honestly answered. Organisations in Australia that are challenging non-inclusive behaviour, providing career pathways, training and development, flexibility and supportive managers, are achieving high return to work rates. Organisations that are not are losing talent in droves. I play chess. I enjoy the game, and I find the parallels to be drawn from the game to the workplace and leadership interesting. When the game was first invented in India, there was no queen, and indeed the game was not played by women. It was in medieval times that the queen first appeared on the chessboard. The weakest on the board, she could only move diagonally, one space at a time, and could only reach 32 of the 64 spaces her king could reach on the board. A little discriminatory. Today, the queen is the most powerful piece on the chessboard. For the unfamiliar, while the rules of the game did not change for her king, the queen has the flexibility to move in any straight line, horizontal, vertical, or diagonal, and can reach all 64 spaces. How did it happen? The chess queen was not able to achieve her power, or let's use the word leadership, without the rules of the game within the four sides of the chessboard being changed. I think it is a great analogy. Those that say time will fix things and is just about filling the pipeline are wrong. The rules of the game within the four office walls must also change if business is to remain sustainable in the long term, and if we are to see women who choose to lead really being able to do so. The rules for advancement in the modern workplace are from a time when women were once forced to resign from the workplace upon marriage, and when men were the primary breadwinner and did very little of the unpaid work in the home. Today, 59% of women with children under the age of four are working, and this is set to grow. Just under 70% of coupled households have dual incomes. Women both want and need to work. As women are recognising the cost to them of not participating in the formal economy, so too are men recognising the opportunity of cost of not participating in the home. For women, work is about achieving a return on their investment in their education and development, ensuring security for their children, improving lifelong earnings, superannuation, status, and leadership opportunities. Our recent research of 800 men in the Generation FPs has showed that regardless of family status, income, education, and age, men are moving away from a work-centric life and wanting a better balance between work and family. The personal loss of divorce, disconnection with family and their community is a cost too great for many men. Business is going to find it harder to attract the male talent to continue the long hour culture. Women in poverty and men without families is a social cost as a community we should not be prepared to pay. Business has an important role to play. To win the pressing war for talent, business needs to change their notion of the ideal worker, being the 60-hour a week or more working white male. Equally urgent is the need to change the notion of who can be a leader, and today's research helps expose that. Business need to better harness female talent, relying on just one half of the available workforce pool does not make business sense. The stupid curve. Harnessing female talent means removing the pervasive negative stereotypes around women in business. This requires strong leadership and commitment from the very top. The setting of goals and introduction of accountability and reporting progress openly. If business is serious about stopping the leakage of talent from within their organisation, they have got to stop fixing the women and start fixing the business environment and culture. The stupid curve is indeed stupid. Thank you.